This week's conversation with Elizabeth Ashdown is sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery at sassyjackstitchery.com. It's a beautiful time of the year to travel to North Carolina and visit the new Sassy Jack store in the Smoky Mountains. Not only is the store a treat to visit, but the communities in the surrounding area are filled with great restaurants and the creativity of artists of all types. Plan a trip to shop and stitch at Sassy Jack's with your stitching friends. You'll also want to monitor the Sassy Jack's website or the Sassy Jack's Facebook page for an upcoming workshop with Jackie DePlessis. The workshop, Fall Bounty, will be held in early November. The Fall Soiree will be the next virtual event, and it will be held October 26. Thanks to Sassy Jack's for sponsoring the show, and now our conversation with Elizabeth Ashdown. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for the needlework artist. Our artist is this week is Elizabeth Ashdown. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Elizabeth back for the second time. Now, the first time, if you want to learn all about Libby and all of her work, passementry is our topic. If you want to learn about all of her weaving and all of her design work, that's the July 8, 2023 show. So you can go back and do that, and I'll put a link in the show notes for that so you can go listen to that. But then at the time, she was starting or was working on a new book. And so then we promised each other that when she got the book done, we would come back and do a show on the book. And it's a smart move because this book is fantastic. Well played.
Oh,
well
thank
played.
You.
Yeah, this is Passementry is just a gorgeous book, and we're going to talk about all about it. But yeah, Beth and I each have our copies of Passementry. We're very proud of it.
Yes, very proud.
Here we go.
Everybody has a yes. All the cool
all
kids.
All at once. There we go. Okay. Yep. So very excited about this book. This book is just fantastic. And people are going to say, well, passementry, I'm not going to make fringe. I'm not going to make this or that. This book, we'll talk about it, but this book is useful to everyone. I'm going to make a tassel. I'm just going
to,
you know, I got to give it a whirl. But cording, all of us need cording for edging, for needlework. And Elizabeth takes us through that. And it's just a tremendous book, a piece you should have in your library if you think at all about finishing needlework of any kind or creating things to, you know, fringes and what do we call trimmings? That's the word I'm after.
Trimmings. Yes.
Yeah.
Trimmings.
So
yes.
Just a tremendous book. But then we talked with Ann Beck a couple weeks ago and Jessica Grimm who were doing courses at Creative Experiences. And then you have a course too. Now yours is sold out. So this is the thing I hate is we talk about something that nobody can get in.
So, oh, I'm sorry.
but so tell about your course because people need to know about this Creative Experiences because the lineup of teachers is just absolutely impressive. And so what is your course and when is it?
So my course is in April and it's over the Easter weekend. So it's, well, and a little bit longer. It's 5 days in total. And we're starting off just an hour south of Paris for 3 days of hands-on workshops. And then we go into Paris. And I think we've got 2 days, 2.5 days where we're going to different passementry showrooms. We're doing a textile tour, all sorts of things, all to do with passementry and trimming. And it's going to be amazing.
That would be an amazing class.
Yes, it is. It's going to be amazing. It's the first time I've ever done it and the first time I've ever worked with Creative Experiences. I think they've been going for 10 years or so, I think. And it's run by a married couple called Nadine and Mark, who have just been wonderful so far. Absolutely brilliant. And I'm really excited. I am so excited that I've got 15 people coming from right across the world to learn about Passamontré. So I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled that there is so much interest in it.
That's great. Yeah. If it's any consolation, if it's any help, we talked at length with Jessica Grimm, who has done at least a couple of these events with Creative Experiences. She just gushed over them. The mm-hmm. facilities that they put people in, the way they pick you up at the airport, make sure you have everything you need, get where you need to go. She just gushed about them. So from her reports, you're going to have a great time doing this.
Yes.
This thing.
That's fantastic.
So you're going to. So people are going to get to go into those shops in Paris that have that massive collection of whatevers. Oh boy.
Yes. We're going to the kind of the ultimate place in Paris called De Klerk Passamontré. So I think they're a seventh generation family of Passamontré makers. And they have this incredible showroom right in the center of Paris, which is huge. And it's a bit like stepping back in time because it feels very Victorian. And they've got this amazing loom. And I think it's run by the daughter now. I think it passed hands. So she's a lady, she's about early 30s, and I think she's going to be showing us around and showing us all the amazing archives. They have all the archives from when they started in 18 something.
Oh, wow. That's going to be fun.
Your event then is these tours of these shops, but then you're teaching something also?
Yes, I am. So we have three very busy days, very full-on days. So we're going to have one day that's dedicated to Passamontré weaving and cord spinning. We're going to have a day dedicated to tassel making. And then the third day is rosette making.
Ooh.
So it's basically a crash course into the kind of four different strands of Passamontré. So the idea being that everyone is going to come away with a nice little range of samples.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Oh. See, what a great way to learn, though.
It makes me even madder that we can't get in.
Oh, place, no. You never know. Hopefully, they'll be running this again at some point.
Yeah.
So keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I hope we're going to do a show with them soon because I wrote to them. We want to know more about this. This is because you go to their website and the people they have teaching courses is a who's who of. It's just a who's who of textile arts, without question, yeah.
And I would like to go on one of the holidays as a participant.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Talk to them about a teacher discount.
I know. Maybe I need to go on it for research.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
This is expense.
Yeah. All right, let's get to this book now. I loved reading the introduction. I just enjoyed that because you really set the stage, I thought, well, because you said say that again. You say it so well.
I can't actually pronounce it the proper way. Passamontré.
Passamontré. Okay, I'll try that. That's the American version of the proper way.
Okay. I've heard all sorts of things, so don't worry.
You say it's not for fusty, old-fashioned set of curtains, but an exciting, diverse, and utterly contemporary art form, creative expression, luxury, hand craftsmanship, and human ingenuity. But the part that I thought that really hit me is you're trying to keep this ancient art alive by making it relevant for us today. And your work, I mean, when we talked to you a year ago, we picked up on that. I mean, that's obvious. You're not doing the same old stuff over and over, but you're finding new paths. And so this book is this book then a way of establishing a new path? Is this kind of what you were trying to achieve?
Yes, I was. That was definitely one of my motivations for writing it. So I was asked to write it, and I'd never thought of writing a book or putting anything together. but I was really aware that there wasn't that many resources about it. It's really strange because it's a craft that is as old as time. Every culture has its own version of passamon trade. It's just not, obviously it's not called that. You know, it's been practiced in the UK since at least the 1200s because we can see it in portraits from the time. So you can see little tassels and things. But there is very little written material. And what you will find is some wonderful books that are written in French, and there's one in German. And you can look at the pictures, and the pictures are beautiful, but they tend to be black and white, so it's not very helpful. But what was missing was actually information about how this stuff is made. And it's really frustrating. And the instructions that you would come across are really few and far between, but they were often really complicated, and they would assume that you had a huge amount of knowledge about weaving or about some aspect of the craft to begin with. So something that I was really conscious of was wanting to write this book for as many people as possible. So if you wanted to make trimmings for a lampshade or a jacket, or you just wanted to make them because for fun, that you had a really accessible and also democratic guide. And you can pick it up and you can just look at it for the pictures, or you can delve into the projects. And I was also really conscious to have kind of different levels of complexity. So, you know, a beginner who's just getting involved in weaving or cord making or tassel making can learn from it, but so can somebody that's been weaving for 20 years. And I was conscious about wanting to have a lot of versatility to it, and also wanting to make it approachable, because we've all seen those terrifying books, which are so complicated.
Yes.
Immediately you just think, I cannot do this because I don't know, this is not making any sense whatsoever.
Yes, right, those books. Right. Those books.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Well, yeah. And I think that's what, when you go through the book, that's what hit me, was just, if you're just skimming through, looking at the photos, immediately I felt a relaxation that, oh, I could approach this just from the photos. So yeah. if it's supported well with text, then we're underway. But you right. can just tell, I mean, you did a really, really good job of illustrating the various steps of things that I almost felt like I don't need any instruction. I can follow.
Good, good.
And I'm not just saying that to make you feel good. I really got that impression just going through. And it was, you know, the first time I just leafed through quickly to see what's in here. And it's like, oh, boy, I could do these things.
That's good. That's really good.
Yeah. It worked. And I was excited because I have a friend that she kept saying, yeah, I have a loom. Don't get a loom. I have a loom where you can. And so the next thing I know, I have two looms. So, and one of them was like, just like sticks. And I'm like, oh, what do I do with this? But I looked at your picture slides and I looked at the other loom she gave me. I was like, okay, I can assemble this.
Yeah.
It looks like most of the pieces are here. If I look back at your instructions, I think I can set this very simple loom up. I mean, it's very, very simple. And I might be able to weave with it. The other one needs to be taken apart and restrung. Yeah. The warp strings need to be redone. But again, I know with this, I can go step by step and do it. It's the rigid heddle loom. It's not an Ashford, okay. It's a different brand, but I know it'll work. And that was the other thing, knowing what kind of warp threads to use. It's like, well, okay, now what? I need to get the prop. I know, because my friend said, yeah, you want to make sure they don't stretch because do that, that's your strength in your weaving. So your instructions on that were perfect, because then I know what to go look for to get my warp threads going.
Good. We want to get those warp threads going successfully.
Yes, because I know that's probably one of the most important things. If I don't get that set up right, then
yes,
I'm not going to have a trim.
For a happy weaver.
Happy Warb is a heavy weaver. Okay.
Okay.
If in doubt, just double knot everything and you should be fine.
Okay. All right. Good to know.
Kettle looms are brilliant because they are really easy and accessible to use once you get going with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you'll find lots of really good videos and things online as well to help.
Right. Okay. Right.
Yeah, so you know, Beth and I have been going back and forth about looms. We'll get back to the book in a second, but we got to talk about looms now.
I love looms.
Because, you know, when somebody says weaving in a loom, the initial reaction is massive thing in a big room that's going to – I don't have that kind of space, you know, and not to mention the expense. But most of what you're doing is on smaller, like tabletop looms, or well, you don't probably, but most of what you show in the book can be done that way. Or how, give us some advice on that.
So there is a whole world of looms out there, and there's a different loom for every different type of weaver, and it can be. I still find it quite bewildering, you know, all the options. Yeah. Well, I kind of stick in my studio. I stick to kind of what I know, and that's fine because it works. So a really nice loom is a frame loom. So you can get a frame loom that's about that size, just a bit bigger than A4. And you can pick them up here for about £20. So not expensive at all. And it comes with shuttles and things, and that's enough to get going. You just need the yarn.
Okay. All right. So a frame loom from our end of the world, a little bit bigger than an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. A4 is...
That's
like
it, yeah.
9 by 12 or something like that. So yeah. A little bit bigger than that for not much money, and you can do an awful lot with that then.
You can do a huge amount on them. Yeah, absolutely. So they're little. I'm just looking up. Should I show you one? I've got one
right
here.
You bet.
So that is a frame loom. That can fit it all in. So... really, really simple. You can lay them flat on the table, or you can kind of clamp it to the table so you can have it in front of you, a bit like a tapestry kind of loom. But you'll see they have teeth. So you can get ones without teeth and ones with teeth. I would say always get one with these kind of teeth or notches, they're called. Your warp runs from the bottom up to the top under a bit of tension. You can see you can probably weave on this one. This is a little bit wider, so you've probably got about 9 inches you could get on here comfortably.
Okay.
And you can weave basically inside, so where you've got these two horizontal bars. So that's the length that you've got. So they're perfect for when you're just playing around or you're learning how to do it or sampling. You know, you can make small pieces. You can make many small pieces, join them together. There's loads of different ways you can do it. But if you're wanting to weave kind of longer pieces or continuous lengths, then you need the next step loom, which is the rigid heddle loom.
Okay.
So they come in a whole variety of widths. I think mine is a 15 inch one, so not very big, slightly deeper. And when you're done with it, you can just put it in the cupboard. You just literally put it on a tabletop, whatever table you've got, you can clamp it down. Then when you're done with it, put it on the shelf, put it in the cupboard. You know, if you're finished using it, it even comes apart, so you can just store the sticks in the cupboard kind of thing. And the beauty with that type of loom is that they have rollers. So rather than this flat notch bar, you can get on a much longer warp. So the warp is the kind of the background, the foundation if you're weaving. So you can get up to kind of 10 meters of warp on them. So you can weave scarves, you can make cushions, lengths past montre, you know, whatever.
So these, the heddle loom then, I already have spent some hours on the internet looking at them. I mean, there's various kinds, but basically you can get one that fits on a table. So you don't need a room with that's in a big open space. And I mean, I recall $200-$250 or so. It looked like you could get one that was not the bottom end, that looked like it had some quality to it. See, that for playing around, I mean, we spend that kind of money on, you know, a set of silk threads for a sampler. So, you know, really not out of reach for anyone.
And no.
Yeah.
No, they're not. They're brilliant. And you're also really lucky in North America that you have so many more weaving shops than we do in the UK. So hopefully, you know, if you're thinking about buying a rigid heddle loom, chances are there should be somewhere fairly close by where you can actually go and have a look at one.
Oh, okay.
Here we sort of have to buy everything online. You're never really sure what you're going to get. But if anyone that's just starting off with weaving, I'd always say go and have a look at the loom if you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Even recently there was a shop here that had a loom. It was a yarn shop. She's since closed and moved because her family moved. But she was getting them in because people were asking her, you know, at yarn shops. So that'd be you know, if I was going to look, you're in a bigger area, Gary, than I am in St. Louis. I'm sure some of the yarn shops that have spinning, they would probably have some sort. They might have a loom, and that would be great. Yeah, the one my friend loaned me, it looks like it's about 3 feet a little longer than 18 inches, less than 3 feet. So it's fairly big, but she did a lot of weaving when she was younger. And so this can fit on my card table easily.
Yeah.
And I know it could be taken apart. But yeah, it's, I was supposed to send Gary one of these, but he might not get one.
I know. That was the initial text was, I have two looms and this one's going to you. And then as the days have gone by, that's been backed off.
You know what? Never mind, Gary. You go get your own looms.
I've accepted.
Yeah, I'm taking it back.
If I want a loom, I'm just going to have to buy one because
I do need my engineers to look at this. I have a engineering son who's going to be home in September, and he loves this sort of thing. He'll love taking it apart and re-putting it back together for me. So that's what I'm kind of waiting on for him to get home.
He'll get it up and running in no time.
That's right, because it's an engineering project for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's okay, Beth. You keep them. I'll get my own loom. It's okay.
Hanging head in shame.
I'll send this one to you. Well,
maybe not. Yeah. Maybe not. I gotta try it first. Yeah. I gotta try this first.
That's all right. That's fine. I'll be okay.
Yeah.
And I think the point that. It hurts deep, Beth.
I'm sure it does.
I'm going to grit my teeth, and we're just going to move on.
Yeah. Instead of buying one of those sewing machines you got in your basement, you get yourself a rigid heddle loom.
Yeah, I'm going to send you three of those things. I'm one of my evening activities is restoring. Old Singer sewing machines, like from the late 1800s, early 1900s, late 1800s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I've got, half dozen down there. I promised my wife I would just have one. There's half dozen of them down there now.
Yeah. But that's the problem, though. It's like with looms. You buy one, then you see another one. Then somebody gives you something, then you buy another
that's
one.
That's right.
Before you know it, you've got six
other
things.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I'm sending you three of those monstrous iron horses, and you can.
They are so beautiful, though, aren't they? The old
singing.
Oh,
they are. Yeah.
Oh, they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're beautiful.
Yeah. So the point, back to the looms and the passementry and all of that, but I think it's important that people understand that when it comes to weaving. That you don't have to invest a lot of money. You don't have to have a great big room with nothing else in it. You can have something for a reasonable cost that fits on a table and can go in a closet. And I don't think people really appreciate that you can do an awful lot with those things. I mean, I picked that up out of the book is the only reason I have any knowledge at all is that I think that's important for people to understand.
Yes, I agree with you. I think it is because weaving can seem like it's totally bewildering because there are so many different types of looms, so many manufacturers, so many, you know, bits of kit and equipment and whatever. But you don't need it. You certainly don't need it all. you literally only need to get going. If you just want to give it a go, you literally just need your frame loom and some yarn, which you can get at any craft shop. Doesn't have to be special, really expensive fine weaving yarn, just your double knit wool or sport weight wool or four ply, whatever. And then you can get up and running. And there's some fabulous resources out there for weaving on frame looms.
Yeah.
That is really accessible, and you can do a lot with them. The only downside with them is if you then want to start weaving longer lengths,
because
you're restricted. Yeah. You know, but you can, you know, you could go and buy a painting canvas. Or if you're handy, you can make a frame, you know, just take the canvas off and then you can use that big painting canvas as your frame to weave on. You just need to wrap your warp around and you're off and running. But there is so much that you can do with weaving. It's literally limitless.
Yeah.
You know, you cannot know it all. There's so many different strands to it. Every culture has got his own form of weaving or a slightly different loom. So there is so much to discover with it. It's just, it's an amazing craft.
Yeah. There was someone, I belong to a group that's, we're making the 17th century caskets, the embroidered caskets. And one of the ladies could not find the trim she wanted, but she had a small loom, almost like a bead loom, a beading loom.
Oh, yeah.
And so she was weaving her trim.
Yeah.
I think that's what she ended up weaving, her own little trim. In this little tiny loom, she said, yeah, I just couldn't find what I needed, so I decided to make my own.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's brilliant. That is perfect, you know, because sometimes you can't.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I've seen people make a little loom from a shoebox to be able to weave small trims. And I mean, it's probably not up for much, you know, if you want to be meters and meters of it. But literally all a loom is it's just a mechanism for holding yarns under tension. So, you know, in theory, you could DIY something on a tabletop. I don't know, clamp yarn, I'm not sure, stick it down with gaffer tape. I don't know. But, you know, as long as you can literally stretch the yarn out under tension, that's all you need. It's just that you make it a bit easier.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about it, weaving it was done long ago when people had very little technology. So it's
backstrap loops.
Yeah, there's one.
Used. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just pop the belt on, lean back, and you're ready. Have the other end around a tree or, you know, whatever, and you're off and running.
Right.
All right.
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 Oh, I'm going to try that. go out in the yard.
See what the neighbors think.
Yeah. That'll get some HOA looks.
Good core muscles, I think, couldn't you? And good back muscles to kind of, you know, lean back without getting terrible back pain.
Right.
But, yeah.
See, that's tempting. Yeah. That's tempting. Just so we could get the email. What are you doing? Yeah.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
So back to the book. I mean, there are not a lot of people who do passementry, that P word. There's not a lot of people in the world that do it at your level, or at least that's my guess. Do you feel a pressure kind of in the back of your mind to keep this art form going? Is that what drives you at some point?
Yes, it is. So in the UK, there's only four of us, four professional independent makers. There's two slightly larger companies. But in terms of people in their own studios, there's just four of us that are doing it. And a man called Brian Turner retired at the end of January this year. And his business had been running for 125 years, although not by him the whole time. It was his great-grandfather that set it up. So loads of Brian's equipment was from that time, so 18-something or another. And then Brian finally decided to retire at 70 or 71, I think he was, shut up his business because nobody wanted it. And I was lucky enough to get a grant to go and train with him just before he gave up. But he was the person that did the majority of the historical kind of recreation work. So he had the royal warrant for passementerie. So he did all the weaving for Buckingham Palace, all the royal palaces, National Trust, English Heritage, kind of you name it, he had done it. But his work was much more focused in that realm. He did a bit of contemporary work, I think, but not that much. So yes, to answer your question, I'm sorry, I'm going off on a tangent. Yes, I do feel, you know, a kind of responsibility to keep it going. I'm the youngest passe montre maker by quite a few decades. And so I don't know whether you've come across the red list of endangered crafts.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Heritage Crafts Publisher. So passe montre has been on it since 2019 as endangered. But when the next list comes out, they think they're going to move us into the critically endangered category. And there are so many different reasons that it's endangered. You know, one of the reasons I think is because there's nowhere to actually go and learn. You have to train with somebody. You know, I teach workshops, but they're day or 2 day workshops, and it takes hours. It takes hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours. And it's, as a craft, it is so comprehensive because it's not just weaving. It's tassel making, rosette making, off loom work. There's needlework involved in it as well. So it's vast. I think you also have to be a bit unusual to want to do it and want to do it for your work and your job. And I think, you know, also there's people aren't aware of it particularly and don't know that it's the thing. Or to reference what you said earlier, think it's something really old fashioned.
Yeah.
Or it's very Victorian, or it's very heavy and it's not relevant and it's not exciting. So that's a big sort of part. I don't like to use the word ethos because I don't have an ethos, but it kind of fits. That's a big part of my work is actually how can we take all these amazing skills and how can we apply them in a way that actually resonates with contemporary people, contemporary audiences and what people want.
Right.
But otherwise, then, they die out completely. Just go.
Dying art, but then people... interior designers of all kinds, people who do anything with fabric, need trimmings. They need that. So it's dying art, but the demand for that kind of product has not gone away.
No, it hasn't. And it's come back into fashion hugely, particularly in interiors. Mm-hmm. However, on the kind of the flip side of this is, so I make everything to order. So I don't keep stock. So if an interior designer phones me up and says, hello, can I have 30 meters for curtains tomorrow? No, you have to wait a month for it. You know, or maybe 2 months if I've got loads of work on. So whereas you can go to a much larger manufacturer who they can send you a sample and they can get the sample to you tomorrow for free. You can then go on and you can order it and then it arrives 3 days later at the upholstery workroom and kind of done. They give you a trade discount, you know, wonderful, whatever. You know, and it's part of it is for me and the other independent kind of hand makers, it's really about working with the right clients who understand the value of something handmade and what that brings to their work and what that brings to their kind of final client. And they're quite few and far between in my experience. You know, we're constantly competing with manufacturers. You know, I was looking at something the other day, I was looking at tassels, and I think these tassels were about 6 inches, huge amounts of handwork in them, and they were being sold for £10. And you just think, you know, the person that has made that, because most of that work will still be handmade when it comes to tassels, you know, they're being paid an absolute pittance. It's probably kind of, you know, dreadful kind of sweatshop workroom overseas where they're, you know, paid dreadfully and whatever. Yeah. But unfortunately, it's like many things in life. It's like clothing as well, isn't it? It gives people a precedent for how much these things cost. So then when they come to somebody who makes everything by hand, and well, yes, it costs three, four times the amount because you're paying for my time and my experience, there's a disconnect. You know, this isn't a new story, is it? It's exactly the same, I'm sure, in embroidery, or it's the same in woodwork, or, it's, you know, upholstery, or whatever it is. And I think that's also partly why the craft is endangered. That's another aspect.
Yeah. Yeah, right. We get that all the time when we show somebody who doesn't know a finished piece of needlework. Do you sell these things? You can't afford them.
No.
You know, if I sell them for what goes into them, you simply can't afford it unless you're filthy rich. You just can't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's the same kind of thing. But there's how long did it take you? I don't know, 200 hours, whatever. It doesn't matter. But it's hard to explain to people. Yeah, there is that huge disconnect that handmade, beautiful textile art of any kind takes time. It takes experience. And if you want to buy it, it's going to cost you. Yeah.
And I'm lucky, I've got absolutely wonderful clients. And one lady in particular that I work with her all the time, she's a couture clothes maker. Mm-hmm. So I do all the prims for her. And she is just such a pleasure to work with because she just understands it. And she understands what I do. And she understands the value of what I can offer her, you know, in her exceptional work. And there's various other people as well. And, you know, I'm really, really lucky. It would just be nice to think that everybody would have that mindset, but.
right.
It's just, you know, it's the reality of it, isn't it? Making things by hand. It's always tricky.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's difficult to win. Yeah. But
mm-hmm.
it is. But I mean, so much of the needle arts are thriving these days. I mean, thank you, pandemic. Are thriving. But then, you know, we've talked to several people who, like you, are keeping some of these smaller aspects of textile arts alive. And it's such an important role because if we lose them, they're gone forever.
Yeah.
You know, if they're not recorded, you know, if they're not recorded in a book so people can learn how to do them, but you know,
right.
it's really important because otherwise they're gone.
Yeah, they are.
And I know I showed my copy to some friends and they were like, wow, I need a copy of this because they do crafting things. They're makers and they know they want to be able to make their own trims, to make their own tassels for their projects. And there is not a good resource. Out there for them to be able to do it. You know, so this was a great, you know, one gal looked through it. She was sitting there. It's like, oh, that, and look at that, and look at that. But it, you know, it does the, if you're a maker to be able to make your own trims, to make your own tassels, to do your own, you know, cording is, you know, something I've done for a while, but to do some of that on your own and not to go buy the manufactured, which don't look as good. They're just not as well made. It's there's a huge advantage to that.
Yeah.
Even in cord twisting. So the one that I use in the book, and I use it all the time myself, is the Anna Crutchley cord twister. And I think you spoke to Anna, didn't you, a few years ago?
We did. And we both own them. Yes, we
own them. They're amazing, aren't they? I love them. They're brilliant. And Anna is so sweet. She's so lovely. But, you know, in the book, that was literally just one way of making cords. It's infinite mm-hmm. what you can do with it. You know, the fibers, the materials, the colors, the diameter, kind of the world is your oyster, just if you just decide to go down the cord spinning route.
Right. Well, and as Beth said, to make a cord using the same threads, fibers that you made your piece with, you can't do better than that. And nothing else measures up to that.
And it doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't at all. You know, as Beth said, you go to the craft store or wherever to buy a cord and it's rubbish. Most of it's awful. It's just cheap, nasty. You can't get the right color. The fibers are horrible.
Right.
Yes, and cord spinning is highly addictive as well.
I've had my children at one end and me twisting at the other, and you know, because you need a long enough for something, and it's kind of fun. But yeah, and the other is the tassel making, because I have a couple projects I think, and I've made. Let's see, is it over there? No, I can't see it. I've made tassels before, and to make ones that are really beautiful is a skill, like where you I think we put, I have one that have, I put beads on it. We did a tassel with beads on it, which was so much fun. But I can see I have a project that I haven't stitched yet, but I know it needs tassels and this cord around it. Like, oh, I need to go pull that out so I can make all the stuff to go with it.
Yes. Have you seen the way that pom-poms are made, the proper passamontre way?
No.
It's amazing. I've just made another set. So all you need is you need two fixed points on a table. So I've got the proper, we call them a third hand, and it's basically like a metal rod that a blacksmith has kind of welded into a clamp so you can clamp it down. You just need two points that you can wrap around. Then you take yarn, loads and loads of yarn. So you need probably, that's about 15 inches, I think, between my hands, and you wrap, and you keep wrapping, and you keep wrapping, and you keep wrapping. You're basically making a big loop. And I think I had 1,000 ends of yarn, so you need a lot of yarn. But then what you do is, say you want an inch pom-poms, you tie every inch, so you make a little sort of your own ruler that you can keep holding up to it. And then you tie every inch really, really tightly. Then all you do is you cut. So we take it off and you've got this peculiar kind of tied, it looks a bit like you're about to do tie-dye, really rigid yarn. And then you just cut. You cut in sections either side of the ties you've put in, dangle it over a kettle, rub it in your hands, and then you get this amazing pom-pom. But you can make loads of them in one go, rather than sitting there with the pom-pom maker.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Oh, yes. Beth just got something to do this afternoon. Look out.
Oh, yeah, except for those tomatoes that are calling my name. But and my husband wants to practice his welding techniques. Maybe I can go get him some clamps. I say, I need something about a foot long, would you say? Or I guess it doesn't matter. They're two independent points, right?
Independent points, yeah. And you just need them on a clamp so you can clamp it to the tabletop. Yeah. And the further away that they're set, obviously the more pom-poms you can make. So if you're just going to make a few, you just need them, you probably need them 12, 15 inches apart. And you just wind. The only thing is you need a lot of yarn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just email me, Beth. I'll send you the proper instructions.
Oh, yes.
Here we go.
A project for Max. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
So when you set out to do this book, was this your original plan to do something that would allow people to approach this whole world of trimmings and pom-poms? And was that your goal, or did it evolve into that as you put the book together?
So when the publisher approached me, their kind of initial brief was to write a book that could kind of be for everyone, essentially. Oh, okay. Now, obviously, you can't write a book for everyone, but it had to be kind of as sort of accessible as possible. But they left it up to me to kind of interpret what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I wrote the book over about 9 months, I think, and I had a very busy Easter weekend where I did most of the writing, which is very stressful, and I just wouldn't advise anyone to do it like that. But the content of the book came from me writing it and from me doing all the step-by-step instructions, because there were lots of things that came to light that I hadn't anticipated until I actually was making the thing. So the book ended up probably being a lot more comprehensive in the kind of technical side of things. Because I thought if I leave out this information, somebody is only getting half the picture. And there's a lot of information in the book that, a beginner weaver probably doesn't need to know. So that's fine. But as you progress through your weaving journey, you do need to know that information. So you've got it and you've got it in one resource. And I'm also not somebody that can learn anything from books. I always give up because they don't make any sense. I don't know whether that's just because I'm not patient enough. Probably that's part of it, to sit and go through it. or sometimes I don't understand the instructions. So I think I very much put this together coming from my point of view. You know, what would I want in a book? And that's what I've got to do in order to make it as comprehensive and as clear as I possibly can.
Okay. Well, right. I'm one who learns from books, and bravo. Bravo.
So, yes. and I'm a picture girl. So I look at the pictures, and then if I have to, I read the words.
Yeah. See, that's what I do.
If I have to.
Yeah, that's what I do. I don't like written instructions particularly.
No. I'm bad about it. I've been joking more and more about it, but it actually is very, very true. So I always look at the pictures to see if I can figure it out looking at the pictures, and then I go back and read the words.
Yes, that's exactly what I do.
Perfect.
Now, how much of the photography in the book did you do yourself? It was most of it?
So all of the step-by-step photographs, I did those with my dad. And my dad used to be a professional sports photographer.
Ah, so. There it is. Okay. Now it comes together because I thought, wow, you have untapped talent, lady.
So I can't kind of have any credit for the photographs. That was all my dad. But it was interesting because dad had done sports photography. So if there's someone running with a ball or falling over or whatever, that was dad's forte. So this was very, very different, but together we got there. And the finished photos, where it's the kind of styled shots, that was done by a really amazing photographer in his studio. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Applause to your dad, because it's yes. You know, it show. I mean, they're just excellent, but that's what makes it work. Yeah. Is there's nothing vague or hard to understand about the photos, all of them. And I can tell that the time was put in to make sure that you illustrated, photographed the necessary steps. You know, there's not gaps in the process. And
I was adamant about that. You know, at various different stages of putting the book together, every single step had to be illustrated, otherwise it just doesn't make sense, because I've got books that steps, and I just find that the most infuriating thing in the pictures.
Right.
And you know, everybody learns, you know, as we just talked about, everybody learns so differently, and particularly creative people quite often are, you know, they may have dyslexia or they may have, you know, other kind of learning differences. So I was hyper aware of that as well.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you bravo for that. And
yes.
And I think a tip of the cap to the publisher for giving you the space to do it and do it right. Because I know there are always limitations to how many pages because of expense and blah, 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 blah. But to give that, I'm sure you had limits and you had to make decisions, but it's all there and it works. So your publisher must be great to work with, and the editor, you know, to the editor too, a really good job on the text.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, they were brilliant. They were actually really, really hands off. They just left me to it.
Did they?
Yeah, they kind of left me to it completely, and I just kind of sent them stuff and that was it. They never really said no to anything, as far as I can remember. So I think they just kind of trusted me to get on with it, and you know, trusted my knowledge. So they were brilliant. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Now, projects in the book, did you set out to make specific for the book, or did you have these already in the bank, so to speak?
It was all made specifically for the book.
Okay.
A couple of things were adapted. So the front cover, this one down at the bottom, this kind of linky piece.
Yeah.
Whoops, I'm going the wrong way. That is a style that I use really frequently in my work. Actually, both the front cover images are. but I just adapted it and kind of tweaked the techniques a little bit to make it really easy to weave on rigid headwear looms or frame looms.
Okay.
But everything else was written specifically for the book.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's something I think it's important. Yeah, because when you look at the images on the front cover, you go, holy smokes, that's way beyond what I could approach. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
you do it. I mean, you use that technique when we talked to you the first time. That was one of the things that really sticks with me, and I've shown it to several people. Look at this. Look at this. This is so cool. But people can do this. And and you show how, and it's just, it's so impressive too.
Thank you. It's an interesting thing with pastel montre as a whole. Yes, it takes hundreds and hundreds of hours to pick it up, but what it's a lot of it is about is kind of patience, being really, same with needlework, being really, really patient and just practicing and practicing and practicing. Once you get to grips with it, different techniques, a lot of them aren't that different from each other. It's like with tassel making, they're not really that different from each other. It's just how you apply them and the materials that you work with. They are fiddly, a lot of them. I'd say actually the weaving is the least fiddly kind of all passe montre. But it's something that just requires a bit of patience and sticking with it until you get it spot on. But it's not like it's something incredibly complicated where you have to do loads of maths and figure it all out and that kind of thing. It's not like that at all. It's just one of those things, you like any craft, just go stick with it.
Saying in the book too, it has some troubleshooting too, which is nice because I always hate it. You know, you run into a problem and you're like, okay, now what? And so that was nice that you hit a lot of those points too, you know, that they're in there. Because if you're a beginner and you run into a problem, you're like, oh, what did I do wrong?
Yeah.
And there are those, all those images you can look, oh, that's my problem, or this is how I fix it. And that's nice. Because if you don't have an instructor with you, how do you know?
Well, that's the thing. And it's tremendously frustrating, isn't it? When you're a beginner at something, you've only ever been given half the picture. And if it was me, I would find it really off-putting. I'd probably just throw it out, you know, throw it off the table or throw it in the bin and think, well, I've had enough of that.
Let's move on.
The nice thing actually about weaving, and I say this to all my classes, I say, look, we can fix 99% of things that happen. You know, generally speaking, it's not going to fall off the loom. It's not like knitting or knitting machine, which I hated using, everything falls off and goes wrong. But, you know, it stays put. The worst thing that can happen is that a warp yarn snaps. It's nothing to panic about. We just tie a new bit on and carry on. You know, there's very little that can actually, touch wood, that can actually go wrong, that you can't fix with a bit of glue or a knot.
Glue or knot, my favorite. Yay.
Yeah, that.
Yep. Perfect.
So the book, I mean, it's great that you had the freedom. So you get this book done and it's out. When the book comes out, are you satisfied, or is it, oh, I want to do more. I've got ideas for another book. This one's got me started. Give me more.
But my husband said to me, he said, if you ever write another book, you have two choices. He said, you either move out for the duration that you're writing it, or we get a divorce.
Ooh.
Ouch.
Oh, ooh. Harsh.
Which, wow. I don't think he meant that, you know, completely. I think there was an element of truth. But yes, I mean, there's not even really kind of scratching the surface with this book. There's so much more that can be written and recorded about it. So I would love to do another one in the future. I just think I probably need to recover from this one.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's just
it. It's been lovely.
No, I mean, it takes a tremendous amount of time and effort and mental focus to do a book and do it well. Yeah.
It does. And because I'd never done one before, I hadn't appreciated how it would just take over and would just dominate everything. And, you know, in retrospect, I shouldn't have taken so much other work on at the same time. So I know if I do one in the, if I do one in the future, I would have to arrange things differently. But I'm really happy with that. I couldn't be any happier with how it turned out. And, you know, the publisher and the editor did a really beautiful job of actually putting it all together, because I didn't have anything to do with the kind of page layout or the overall design of the book. That was all them. And they've kind of done it beautifully and very much in sync with the kind of the spirit and energy of what I was wanting to achieve.
You should be absolutely proud of the end result, because the whole, and it takes so many people to make a book happen. And mm-hmm. if they're all good people, and you obviously had good people, then you end up with a product like this. So,
right.
It was very much a family affair as well. Yes.
Well, you've been threatened with divorce, so I guess so.
I know, it's all good, is it?
Yeah, that's taking it right to the limit right there. Yeah.
Just being dramatic, I think.
But so then there's a good lesson too. Don't take, you know, if I'm going to do a book, be careful how much other work I take on. There's an experience that very few people get.
Absolutely, it is. And it's also with the book, so you're paid in installments and you're not paid anywhere near the amount of money that for the amount of effort and work that you have to put into it. So, you know, it's, I don't know how people do it without doing any other work at once, kind of thing. But yes, with hindsight, I should have probably thought about that a bit more.
But that's the tough part. You got to pay the bills,
right?
And you can't turn away work, because I mean, like you said, there's four of you. You know, I mean, for crying out loud. You gotta play your part, but then you want to do this book, and there's 24 hours in a day. We need to change that part, and then it'll work.
Yeah, we do. We absolutely do.
Yeah,
there's never a time. No, I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you nailed it. I know both Beth and I have really enjoyed going through it, and I know we're both going to find it to be useful in the future. And that's, you know, that's where the, if you're going to have a book, if it's not useful down the road, then it's just paper. So,
exactly.
So, bravo.
Oh, that's so good. And I've been so pleased, because people have been emailing me things that they've made from the book, or they tag me on Instagram.
Nice.
And that honestly is just the best part of actually having the book. Is knowing that people really enjoy it, but knowing that, you know, the instructions make sense, and that people have just put their own spin on it and have made all these amazing things. I just, that has been my favorite bit, is seeing what people have made.
So that's the teacher's award then. That's the teacher's award, is seeing what the student does then. Okay.
It's just, it made all that hard work worth it. When I got the first email a couple of months after it came out, and Liz said, I just wanted to let you know that I've made this project from your book. I think she'd made four or five different things from it and sent me pictures. And I just thought that has made everything worth it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, Elizabeth, just, you know, applause to you. Congratulations. Really a great book. Passamontre, Elizabeth Ashdown. We can get it from you in the States. We get it from the usual sources.
Usual sources. You can order it, I think, directly from the publisher as well, from Schiffer, but yeah, you can get it anywhere.
Okay. All right. Terrific. So,
brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Congratulations. And
yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks to everyone for listening.
Bye.